Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode one of Podding on the Ritz, the new podcast from Ross Noble and me, Hadley Fraser, set in London's glistering West End. We are at the...
I'm here as well.
Oh, yeah, no, we should say that.
I'm here as well.
Yeah.
But Hadley's just his proper actor.
Yeah.
So he can do this.
And you're putting honey in your cups, you know, you're otherwise engaged. Yeah. Ross and I are starring in... Starring? Is that...
That's all right. You're starring, I'm a co-star. So.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. I'm starring in Mel Brooks's Young Frankenstein at the Garrick Theatre in the West End of London. And backstage, while we've some time on our hands, we decided to record a podcast. This episode was recorded back in October 2017 when we'd done about 35 shows. We're recording this now in the future.
Yeah. Whoa, look out for that flying car.
Yeah, they're amazing, aren't they? When we... recorded this podcast, we hadn't come up with a name yet.
No.
So thank you to the person on Twitter who came up with the name Podding on the Ritz, which we loved. Also, Ross, later on in the show, I know you love this bit, probably more than me.
Yeah, I love it.
But it's our one nod to some sort of format, and it's Musical of the Week. Oh. And on this episode, we'll be talking about Starlight Express.
Right.
Shall we get on with it?
It's showtime!
The pair that we cry for, the pair that we sigh for, the pair that we die for, is from...
So do you want to start?
Sure.
Okay.
Right. The start is, do you want to start?
Do you want to start? I mean, I can start if
you want. Yeah, go on then.
No, you start. Because you sound like proper.
What, because I'm from the South?
Yeah.
That's what
but there's probably people from overseas listening in. And they're probably, you know, if they don't know who I am, they'll go, I'm not listening.
Well, if they don't know who you are, they certainly won't know who I am.
No, but you sound more... Like, if they listen to me, they'll just think I was just like a podcast about bin men or something.
Theatrical bin men. Yeah. Famous theatrical bin man, Ross Noble.
Right, go on then.
Anyway, welcome
to
the show. That was just a little bit about theatrical bin men.
That was their voice of Hadley Fraser there.
Yeah, and that's the voice of Ross Noble.
And this is our podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, we've not come up with a name for it yet.
Really. But it's all about the West End.
It's about the West End, it's about theatre, it's about... would it be fair to say introducing you to the world of musical theatre and theatre in general, Ross?
Yeah.
You're a recent convert to the world of song and dance.
Yeah.
How do you feel?
Well, I am a song and dance man now, officially.
Do you feel like your natural form has sort of taken shape?
I think so, yeah. I think it's taken I think it's taken the industry a long time to fully realise that.
That's what it is. It's been sort of traction in the industry rather than your desire.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I should say that I have based... So we should say why we're here, where we are. That's explained.
Yeah.
So we're currently... Can I read out your credentials?
Yeah, please do.
This is from the...
This is setting me up as some sort of authority on the theatre.
Yeah, because you're like proper song and dance man.
All right, okay.
No, you're like proper singer though, aren't you? Proper... What's that? What would you... a vocalist?
Let me read this out.
Hadley Fraser, right, who plays Frederick Frankenstein in Young Frankenstein.
Which we should mention is the show that we're in, which is why we're here
recording
this.
That's right, we're in the theatre, the Garrick Theatre.
In London's West End.
In London's fashionable West End. Yeah. With, and this is the theatre where we're performing.
Yeah, we should say that.
We should say that as well.
And we're in your dressing room. We should say that.
This is the bowels
of theatrical endeavour.
Yeah, and so you're playing Frederick Frankenstein.
Correct.
Do you like the way I looked at the programme there? Even though we've done 35 shows.
You still had to just double check.
I just went, oh, yeah. So you were playing Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah.
You are the handsome, dashing, romantic lead.
Yeah, you could say that,
I am the hunchback assistant.
Did you feel like that was always part of your destiny? Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So you get to get off with a very pleasant-looking lass every night in some Australian.
Yeah.
And...
You get to eat a dog, the head of a dog.
Yeah, I get to bite the head off a dog. So, there you go. So it says here, right, this is your... but you were in this theatre as part of the Kenneth Branagh...
Yeah, I was as part of the... I'm proper. You know what I mean?
Proper.
Yeah, proper, isn't
like
it?
Like a proper
Kenneth Branagh Theatre season two years ago.
Which...
Actually, Judy Dench was in this dressing room, we should say that.
The Dench Suite.
The Dench Suite. And Zoe Wanamaker. This is the Dench Wanamaker room.
And then Branagh had the
where room. Leslie Joseph is.
Yeah, yeah, because we should
plays Frau Blücher. Yeah. She's also in our show.
And then who was in yours?
Michael Pennington and John Shrapnel, two wonderful actors who have done everything under the sun. Yeah, nice. It's the Pennington Shrapnel Suite.
We should put some pictures of this on Twitter at some point so people can see. Or it's Theatre of the Mind.
Yeah. Yeah. The willing suspension of disbelief. They probably don't need to see how many bottles of Robinson high juice you've got.
Yeah, but what I've done there, right? I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I've got 7 bottles of Robinson's. We're not sponsored by them.
No.
But I've bought all of them because I get quite thirsty.
Yeah.
It's very important.
To lubricate the voice.
For the throat.
Yeah.
To drink lots of fluid. But I don't like straight water.
Do you not?
No. I think about what fish do in it and it puts... I've got to do the unpleasant.
But the stuff that fish do is still in there, even if you add Robinson's. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, but it takes the edge off it.
Okay.
It's like licking a tramp. If you had to lick a tramp, if you poured a bit of jam on them first...
Would you put the jam on first or would you just have it as a chaser, a jam chaser?
Well, like a tequila, like a jam slammer. I think that's not politically correct. I think you have to say homeless. But
okay.
If you, and I think it's preserve rather than jam. Get your preserve, just put it on his face.
Yeah.
And then you're licking it. But you go, that's from strawberry.
And you don't get any of the...
And then you don't get that thing of, you go, strawberry vagrant. instead of going like, God, why?
Just pure vagrant. Yeah.
So when you were doing, I still haven't got to your CV
go on,
yet.
Give us the
CV. But you were in the French one, the singing French people, weren't you?
Yeah, yeah, the miserable French.
Yeah, the miserable French one.
Yeah.
So when you was in Leeds,
yeah.
what would your warm up be? What should you be doing properly
to warm up
to get yourself like.
Well, I mean, you can decide really how much warm-up you want to do. I went through a stage, because I don't really enjoy warming up, of trying to sort of come up with the theory of surprising the voice. So coming out on stage and having not warmed up. It didn't last very long, though, actually, because I think I went off quite soon afterwards, surprising having lost my voice.
Right, anyway, let me introduce you.
Yeah,
right.
Go on, then.
So let's go through this right here. So I've established
your credentials.
I was, tell jokes, and then I did the producers, Mel Brooks show, and they went, "Oh, that fella, look at that!
You can have a go.
He can have a go." So that's me, and so we've dealt with me, right? And then let's go through these ones here. So you did the Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, I did the 25th anniversary at the Albert Hall, the posh one.
Oh, nice!
I've never done the show itself, just the.
Oh, why would you?
Well. Yeah, I did a good question.
Yeah, I'm hoping to do the same in The Lion King.
What, the 25th anniversary?
25th anniversary, I want to play, the grass. Have you seen the show? I was doing, the first time I did the West End, the first time I did the West End, I was doing my show down at the Vaudeville Theatre there.
Yeah.
And I used to go past the stage door of The Lion King every night. And... I'd always be like a little zebra there having a fag, just hanging around.
Half-time zebra.
Well, it's quite nice, you'd have a lion and an antelope just chatting. And if that's not...
Like a very peaceful Serengeti.
Yeah, if that's not...
It's a reversal of the natural order of things, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's lovely, isn't it? That's what society should be.
Peace and harmony. Maybe that's what musical theatre teaches us.
It does.
Yeah.
And then, so you've got grass. There's a bit where they all come out... And there's people dressed as grass, and they've got like.
Is this real?
This is a real thing in The Lion King. The grass. Like, it's like ensemble members. It's not like a featured part.
The grass.
And right. They come out and they've got like grass skirts on. And I think maybe it's like some sort of grass top.
Well, presumably.
Yeah.
Because what else would they be wearing if they're grass?
Well, you could just be like no top.
Jumper.
On. Somebody's left a jumper in the grass. It's like, you know, when you see somebody's done a bit of fly tipping, that's what they should do. If I was in that show, I would have like just a bit of an old fridge.
Yeah.
And then
shopping trolley handle.
It's like, I've always wanted to go to Cats and sit in the front row dressed as a dog. Just shaking my head. Boo, boo. That's what we should make that a feature. The best way to heckle at a West End show.
Yeah. Or the best costume to heckle in at a specific show.
Yeah. Because we get that here, don't we, quite a lot where...
Yeah, it does seem to be a bit of audience participation,
please,
doesn't
please
it?
Please don't. If you're coming to see us in
not
the
sanctioning
show,
it.
Please do not.
No. I mean, we can kind of cope with it in a show like this, but it's not encouraged.
I mean...
You know, if you're doing Chekhov or something like that, I think heckling should be at a minimum. You know, we can sort of cope with it here, can't we, don't you think?
I mean, people know the film well, so I get what hump a lot.
Yeah, you do.
People do that.
Presumably, though, you've encountered harsher hecklers than we've had,
yeah, but
you know, in the
job. But I can deal with it. That's the thing. But with this, I've kind of got...
You've got the script.
Stuff to do.
Yeah.
You know?
You've got dancing to do.
I'm dancing, mate. I can't be... In fact, why don't I do that? When I go back to doing stand-up, and somebody just goes, "Where'd you get your shoes?" If it was shallow, "Where'd you get your shoes?" I go, "Not now, mate." And I'll just
get out of jail free card.
I just start tapping.
The get out of jail dance.
Yeah, anyway, so what was I saying? Oh, yeah, so grass. There's a. They come on dressed as grass, and then they sort of swish, and they wear a hat, like a grass hat.
Yeah,
it's like a flat. It's got like
been mown.
Yeah, come on with a strimmer.
Sit on lawnmower.
So yeah,
they've got that grass hat.
They've got like big flat, like mortarboards with grass.
This isn't real thing.
Honestly, the Lion King. And they've got like mortarboards. I might have dreamt this. And then my wife took the kids to see it, and there's a bit where Mufasa's head. They've got all these different bits of his head, and it comes together. And it's the night sky, and it's this incredible moment where there's this giant lion's head appears. And it's beautifully done. The night they went, obviously one of the poles had snapped. His eye was missing. My 9-year-old thought it was the funniest thing ever. I said, "How was the show?" She went, "His eye was missing! He didn't have an eye!" So
those are the best nights when things go wrong, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
Really, though? Yeah. I mean, for the cast and for the audience, I think, it's always a bit of a bonus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a bit of a missing...
We had quite a few troubles, didn't we? Because we did this, we should come back. We did Young Frankenstein, the reason that we're here.
I've still got your CV.
Stop the clock. So we did it up in Newcastle to try it out first. Yeah. Is it customarily done sometimes just to sort of give the show a bit of a sort of run out in front of an audience and see which bits are successful, see which bits are unsuccessful. Yeah. And, you know, that goes not only for the script and the songs and the choreography and all of that sort of stuff, but for the technical things as well. And we did have a couple of technical breakdowns in Newcastle, which I think we covered quite well.
Yeah. I think that was... what slightly annoyed me about that was... Is that a helicopter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Miss Saigon.
We've got to go.
That's it. We're the last people out.
Just turn up at the theatre and go, "Done star for 6 months, mate." Just, yeah, but you've booked it. Oh, well, we'll incorporate it into the show.
Young Frankenstein.
I think my favourite was when we went out there and started talking about the fact that there was a B&Q was opening in Transylvania. Yeah. But the thing that annoyed me about that was that because we were getting laughs, because we were improvising in character, the audience thought it was part of the show.
Yeah.
Which sort of, when you've spent 3 months working on every detail of the show, and then they go, "Oh, that was a good bit." But also, I love the fact that my favourite thing about that was that one night when we were talking about Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen, and Mel Brooks was in the audience and was, "It's funny, but who the fuck is Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen?" Brilliant. I mean, that's...
Yeah, that one didn't really cross the Atlantic, did it?
That should be on the poster. Right, okay, let's crack on. Let's crack on with this CV, like, establishing... So, you're in that. You're in the Phantom.
Yeah.
You were in the French, the Les Mis.
Yeah. And in the film as well.
And the film, yes. So you played Russell Crowe.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
On stage.
I was playing Russell Crowe while Russell Crowe was playing Russell Crowe in the film.
Yeah. You know what I like about Russell Crowe, right? Because, I mean, not one to be a massive name dropper, but I did the one show with him just a few weeks ago there. What I like about him is that when he gets himself all beefed up for the roles, so he'd be in incredible shape, like a gladiator type role, you know, or he'll be a boxer or something, and then, poof, just let it go.
Yeah.
And I like that.
That's the dream, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Look great, and then when you don't have to...
But those films, they're on all the time. So
that's how you remember him.
So in your head, you just go, wow.
And he's in good shape, isn't he? I tell you who is in good shape. It's Hugh Jackman.
Oh.
He walked onto set.
Yeah, he was in that. So, of course, he was the...
In all fairness, you know, 6'5" of pure muscle. That's impressive.
Was he still in his Wolverine phase, or is he just like that all the time?
I suspect he's just like that all the time. And he had a chef coming onto set giving him, you know, a plate of eggs every 2 hours. Because you've got to keep it up, haven't you?
Oh, my God. Well, no wonder he looks good.
He's got egg man.
You'll often hear the words cuckoo-cachoo used on the set. That's what he does.
The alarm.
Yeah, when he wants, he's just on set. He's a lovely bloke. He never demands anything, but he'll just, and he won't shout it. He'll just turn around to an assistant and go, cuckoo-cachoo. And they go, get the egg man. Yeah. And then he'll say,
within seconds.
He's got lots of them. And he'll go...
Like, if he does it in a different key, that means a different sort of egg.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Very low.
Yeah.
He likes them runny.
Yeah.
He'll go, cuckoo-cachoo. Like, really.
Yeah, just quite a sort of scrambled runny. Just,
yeah.
If it's high, maybe it's poached.
Yeah. And he's... So he'll just say that. He'll just go, cuckoo-cachoo. And then one of them will come in. And if it's someone he's not worked with before, he'll go, are you the egg man? He's like, I am the egg man. Who are they with you? We are the Eggmen. Yeah, and then I'll be a big fat bloke and go, don't even ask.
You'll have to have a tash though with me.
Yeah, big mustache like that. For the younger listeners, just Google.
Yeah.
Google it.
The Beatles.
Very popular. Yeah, so, you're in that. You're in the Phantom.
Yeah.
Because while we're putting everything out there, you have a giant following amongst... young Japanese women.
I wouldn't say giant, significant.
Well, significant, yeah. I'm not saying they're giant Japanese women. It's not like a Godzilla situation.
They cross the oceans under their own steam.
They've just gone, oh, God, shall we book Hadley for a show? No, because his fans will destroy London with their laser eyes.
Massive feet.
It's opening night.
Got to rebuild the Garrick again.
Oh, God, they've knocked the London Eye down. it's the significant. I would say.
Well, Phantom of the Opera, the 25th anniversary that I recorded, it went out on DVD and it did really well over there, see? So I think that's why that's happened. And for some reason, I think they like the character that I played. They like what he stands for.
Yeah.
They like the cut of his jib.
Yeah.
You know.
But I think it goes beyond that. I think they've gone, hang on, who's this fella? And they've looked beyond that.
Oh, I see.
I think that's what
to the truth
done.
Beneath.
I think they've gone... I think they've enjoyed that, and then they've gone, who's this? Because like people who like Hugh Jackman, they don't go, oh, like that when he's cutting people up with these big claws. They go,
they like that a bit, though, don't they?
They like it a bit.
Or is that the gateway?
Yeah, and then they say, oh, who is this? This seems like the sort of guy that has eggs delivered to him every 2 hours.
He's got an egg man.
Exactly, yeah.
I like that about him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, let's crack on with this. So you did...
I've done a bit of singing.
There's all the singing there.
Yeah.
You're a fellow of the Royal Academy, whereas I'm a fellow who's walked past the Royal Academy. Fellow of the Royal Academy of Music.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, oh, look, it's never ends. Look, you've got Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah.
You've done the Donmar Warehouse, St. Joan.
Yeah.
Which is the...
George Bernard Shaw.
Oh, I thought it was the Joan Sims story.
The story of Joan Sims.
Yeah. Coriolanus, City of Angels, The Vote, all at the Donmar Warehouse.
Yeah. That's a little sort of 250-seat theatre in the middle of the West End.
Yeah, but it's
It's quite zhuzhy,
it's
I suppose.
It's Dardy Dar, isn't it? The Dog yeah, Bar Warehouse?
I suppose so.
I mean, it's no car phone warehouse. I'll give you that. The queues aren't as long.
Imagine it being called a car phone. Like, that was what it started out as.
And then they couldn't change it because they'd committed
that
to
they committed to it.
I love it. I love it. And also, it's not a warehouse. It's a retail store.
Yeah. But they had to run with it.
They had to keep...
Is it still going, the car phone warehouse?
Yeah, car phone warehouse. I think they tried to change it to, like, the phone warehouse.
No.
But, yeah, the car phone warehouse. So, but the Donmar warehouse, was that... Was it? It was a warehouse.
It was a banana ripening warehouse. Really? Funnily enough, yeah. Back when Covent Garden, I suppose, was still a
fruit and
an
flowers.
Operative market, you know, oh. And it was the big banana ripening warehouse,
and
then I think someone bought it from I think Margot Fontaine, who was a dancer.
Dancer. I know. Yeah.
She, yeah, well done. Come well, on. I suppose you're some dance man now,
song
isn't
dance
it?
Man, yes.
I think yeah. Her husband or a benefactor bought it for her as a rehearsal space.
Ah.
I'm plucking this out of the recesses of my mind. And his name was Donald, and her name's obviously Margot, hence Donmar.
Ah,
and so it became this sort of rehearsal space, and then it became a sort of studio theatre.
Portmanteau. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then Sam Mendes sort of took it over. I think it would have been late 80s. And sort of made it what it is today, I suppose.
Oh, right.
And that was the...
Because when you said, I thought Donmar, I thought that was what an unripened banana was called. Like, yeah. The Donmar warehouse. Could I get
I've got 50
banana?
Crates of Donmars in there.
They're still Donmar.
Yeah.
You've got to wait. They're Mar. Mar bananas. And then once they're ripened, they're Donmar.
They're Donmar.
Are they Donmar? Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
I didn't know Margot Fontaine dancing in a warehouse.
Aye. Yeah.
Who would have thought?
Well, that was a different time back then, wasn't it?
Just dancing in a warehouse. Yeah.
In the middle of the West End, though. Can you imagine now someone buying a space that size in the middle of the West End just to ripen bananas?
Well, I heard that Michael Ball has got his own grain silo.
Just round the back of the Adelphi.
Yeah,
yeah.
Round the back of there, he's had it. He bought it from the Amish.
Yeah,
and he had it helicoptered. That was probably him helicoptering it in. He used the helicopter from Miss Saigon. He's had a big hole sunk in the ground. He's lowered the silo in.
Yeah,
and then he abseils in.
Yeah,
every morning. So he can have a proper sing without disturbing the neighbours.
Probably a good acoustic in there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So Winter's Tale and Harlequin Age, you were in that.
That was here, yeah.
That was with Branagh.
Yeah.
And I'm a big... Now...
Come on.
You've got a... what do you call them? A snow globe, you call them, or a...
Snow globe, yeah.
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 Now this is almost a sort of Indiana Jones... sort of tale of how would you put it, like sort of a mysterious tale of intrigue about this hidden treasure,
about the snow globes.
Yeah,
yeah. So Ken apparently had them made as part first night gifts, because what you do usually if you're in the cast of a show is give one another and give everybody involved in the production a card and a present, maybe as a good luck sort of token for the press night.
Yeah.
And Ken had these snow globes made. It was, you know, nicely made. They've got the sort of frontispiece of the Garrick Theatre on, saying Kenneth Branagh Theatre Company, you know, lovely memento. And he had them done part first night gifts, but also part merchandise to sell at the front of the theatre for the shows. And I think they had about 1,000 of them made, apparently. And bearing in mind that the season that Ken did was about a year long, and I think was about 6 or 7 productions in total, I think they were thinking that that would be the sort of first run, and then they'd obviously go back to the manufacturers and get some more done. But I think it quickly became apparent that they weren't selling very well. And so on my first night here for Young Frankenstein, the producers, who also produced the Branagh season, gave me one of these snow globes and confessed that they still had 850 of them in the balcony of the theatre unsold.
Brilliant. So somewhere in this theatre...
Yeah.
Is 800.
If you can get up to the balcony somehow, it would be like the that final Indiana Jones scene. There'd just be miles and miles of snow globes.
Right.
That would be it.
Because I think what we should do is we should retrieve them, take them out of the boxes,
yeah,
and set them all up in here, all 800 on a shelf.
And do you think we could give them away?
Yeah, we should do them as prizes for the listeners of this. But also, why not tweet either of us, so I'm at Real Ross Noble.
Or at Hadley Fraser.
And tell us what you would do with 800 Kenneth Branagh snow globes.
Yeah.
Because we could, I mean... We could
think just, the theatre would be happy to see the back of them.
Yeah. So, I mean, either just one... Or
800.
All 800. Or say, you think, well, I could use five of them to... Say you've got like a, I don't know, like something that needs counterbalancing.
Yeah.
You know, say you've got a cat that likes to sleep on a particular shelf.
Yeah.
But it's just unsettling that you think six of those would be the weight of a cat. Yeah.
Then, yeah, you'd have to find the right weight, wouldn't you? Just to kind of find the counterbalance there.
I wonder
but...
how much a cat weighs.
Well... About 6 kilograms.
Something like that. You know who'd know? Elaine Page.
She would.
Because she was...
She was in Cats.
Yeah.
That brings to mind, actually, when you set out in the world of entertainment, was there one thing that you thought you would probably avoid, you know, appearing on? You know, in terms of, like, exposure and things? Because you've been on The One Show, haven't you? You've been on... Jonathan Ross, I'm sure. Have you been on all the chat shows, I imagine.
Yeah.
Did you ever think that you'd make it onto Elaine Page on Sunday?
You know what? It was a distant dream that I never vocalised.
Right. But it was there deep down, was it?
Deep down. And
coursing through your veins.
Like, I would never. But yeah, I think you and I, last Sunday, were featured, not just mentioned. We were featured.
We should say that this is a radio show on BBC Two that's probably the sort of foremost musical theatre show in the UK in terms of, you know, playing musical theatre and talking about this theatre in a sort of wider context.
Presented by
Elaine Page.
Elaine the Cat Page, as I call her. I mean, I'm sort of fairly new to
Do you know Phil Tufnell's nickname is The Cat as well?
Is that right?
Yeah. Phil the Cat Tufnell. I wonder if that because he was in Cats.
He was, yeah. He used to come in just to do the catching. Like, if there was ever, like, say, like, if Elaine ever brought up a furball, which she used to do on a regular way, because before she sang the memories,
she'd have to get rid of a furball.
You know, so she'd be in the wings and you'd just hear.
Yeah.
And the furball would come flying out. Well, you can't have a mucus-covered furball flying into the front row.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Or even backstage, someone might slip on it.
Exactly.
Especially in the cat costumes.
Oh, yeah. Because they've got with the...
Claws.
The claws on the shiny floor.
Yeah, very unstable.
Can't get them purchased.
Yeah.
That show was an absolute health and safety nightmare. Sometimes the people backstage, just to annoy Elaine, what they would do is they'd get a laser pointer... And they were just they were just shaking around in her dressing room, and she would and that's the problem because
she never made it on.
Well, she'd be trying to bury her own shit.
It's musical of the week.
Well, let's do that, and then I'll finish introducing you.
All right, okay. Because when we're
is this Elaine Page related?
Well, no, not really, but it's the same composer.
Oh, okay, all right, cool.
Have you ever seen the musical Starlight Express?
with the
trains,
the roller skating trains.
Yeah,
I never did.
And do you know what? My mum bought me tickets for my 18th birthday.
Wow.
And for me and my girlfriend at school, but then I went to university before the performance date that she bought me for and I'd broken up with my girlfriend. God. So I had to take my best mate from university, Ed.
Right.
And we'd have a couple of drinks and then we went to see Starlight Express. And I don't think we were the target audience because we looked at each other at half time and went to the pub over the road. So I've never seen the whole thing.
Right.
So I thought we could discover it together almost.
Yeah, brilliant.
Because I don't really remember that much of it. Moving on from that. Right. So it's the story of a child's train set that comes to life and the various engines... I'm just getting this off Wikipedia.
It's fine.
And the various engines compete to become the fastest engine in the world. So that's the sort of after right. the show.
So this is, so in a way, you talk, this is pre-Toy Story.
Yeah, long before it. It was...
it's pre-Cars, Lightning McQueen.
I mean, this is the forerunner, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's the underdog, Rusty, the steam engine, see?
Right.
You know...
Of course.
He has little chance until he's inspired by the legend of the Starlight Express, who's effectively the god figure. It comes to part. It strikes me, you know, reading through all the material.
Okay, right.
Starlight Express, and it's interesting, really. I think it must be allegorical, this musical, because you'll see by the end,
right,
that their response, the character's response to Starlight Express, is interesting.
Right, okay.
And it leads me to think that Andrew Lloyd Webber and Richard Stilgo aren't the people that I put them down as.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, what I was going to say, I don't want to ruin your flow here, but yeah. I would say that if this is going to become a new production,
yeah,
right, obviously you've got to look at modern trains, the bullet train.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is put the bullet train in, get you in to play it.
Yeah.
That's going to be a hit in Japan, isn't it?
Wait for it.
Okay.
Wait for
right,
it.
Okay.
Hold that thought.
Right.
Anyway, so...
Go on.
He wins... Ultimately, of course, he's the underdog. He wins the race and yeah. also the heart of his love interest, the first-class coach, Pearl.
Right.
Right? Okay. Anyway, so what right. happens is the show opens with the voice of control, with a capital C.
Can I just check? Before she falls in love, is she a virgin train?
Presume so, because it is for kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Although there's some surprising things right, in okay, here, actually, on, that on. You'd think maybe a kid's audience might go over their heads.
Right, okay.
Control, whom the audience never sees, ordering his toy trains into racing mode, right?
Wow.
So he begins to fall asleep and the trains skate around and that and sort of scuttle about, you know, yeah. obviously doing their thing. Greaseball and his gang of diesel trains interrupt, singing their own praises. I'm saying all of this I just want to say it ran for over 7,000 performances. Wow. I'm not here sniping from the sidelines. This is a successful show.
We're 35 in.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. So then Rusty appears, right? And he's dreaming about winning the thing, but he knows he's never going to be able to. And the coaches all come in and they question his ability to race. Do you want to know what the names of the coaches are?
I do, yeah.
Ashley, the smoking car.
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
Ashley.
Buffy, the buffet car.
Amazing.
Dinah.
I don't know. Give me a minute. Dinah.
And
Diana. Is it Diana?
No, it's Dinah. D-I-N-A-H.
They didn't even go for Diana.
No. Dinah and Pearl, who's the one he falls in love with. Greaseball comes back. He thinks he's brilliant. And then the...
Singing their own praises.
Yeah.
What is that song?
That song's called Rolling Stock. But then he's got another one, which I think, again, boasting of his own greatness, called Pumping Iron.
Oh.
So they obviously thought he wasn't boastful enough. Rusty counters, bringing on the freight cars.
Yeah.
Rockies 1, 2 and 3... Flat Top, Dustin, and CB.
Amazing.
But get this.
Right.
This is, I think, my favourite bit.
Okay.
The national engines arrive.
Oh.
International.
Right.
Bobo from France.
Right.
Espresso from Italy.
Of course.
Ruhrgold from...
Germany.
Yes. Turnov from...
Russia.
Hashimoto.
Oh, my God. Oh, Hashimoto
from
Japan. Yeah,
but get this.
Go on.
If you're trying to sort of distill the spirit of British engineering and locomotive history into one name of a national engine, what would you go for?
Well, it's got. I mean, surely the Flying Scotsman. It's got to
could be that.
It's
or you could call
the
it
Rocket, the Stevenson's Rocket. Yeah,
you know what? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
do you know what they called it?
Broom, broom, Brunel, something like
something
that.
Something like that would have done. They called it the City of.
I didn't even hear what you said. What? No, sit. What? No, sit. Say it. I'm not reading it. I want you to say it out loud. You've got to say it. What? What's it called?
It's called the City of Milton Keynes.
Yes.
I mean,
what?
I just
Isn't it a new town?
It's a new town.
It's not a city.
It's not, you know, it's not even a sort of... It's not like Didcot or something, which immediately makes me think of...
Didcot Parkway.
Exactly.
Yeah, Crewe.
Something like that.
I mean, Crewe is that, like, he's part of the Crewe.
You could have that, couldn't you?
Famous interchanges of Britain.
Let me just run through those again. Bobo from France, Espresso from Italy, Ruhrgold from Germany, Turnov from Russia, Hashimoto from Japan, and the city of Milton Keynes from Great Britain. I don't know.
The city of Milton Keynes.
I don't know if he's still in the show, whether this was the original one, because I would have thought, as part of the creative team, you'd probably step back and think... We can make that catchier. And
was he called Milton Keynes?
No,
was it like, well, here comes Mystic, here comes Lord Keynes.
It Milton says here, you. It's all capitalized. The city of Milton Keynes. Anyway, Electra, the electric train.
Right, clever.
Makes a surprise late entry. She is as much of a show off as Greaseball and suggests that he will take either male or female partners in the song AC/DC.
What?
Yeah. And for a children's, you know, like, yeah. that's remarkably forward thinking, I think.
Yeah.
In the early 80s, to be suggesting that, you know, whatever sexuality floats your boat, go for it. I think that's brilliant.
I mean, I have heard that used as a term for bisexual.
Yeah.
My father-in-law did say, I think he's a little bit AC/DC.
And maybe that's where it came from.
Who knew that my father-in-law is a
musical theatre fan?
Yeah, I didn't know that. I did not know that.
Anyway, so there's a few things that happen. There's a few races and whatnot. Yeah. In the first heat, Greaseball, racing with Dinah, cheats, bullies, and forces his way ahead of Hashimoto and Espresso. Anyway, I think a few more things happen.
Is Espresso... I'm hoping that when Espresso... I like to think Espresso is a steam train, and as he's like...
Espresso, I think, is... Hang on a minute. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I'm not sure, actually, if he's steam or...
Because I like the idea that, you know, that thing on the machine you get in, like, the baristas use, where they put the... And it goes... I like the idea he's got a tube out the back. and he just, like, squirts hot milk onto the children in the audience.
Maybe all those espresso machines are built from the cast-off costumes...
I think that's...
...over the years... Of members of the cast of
Starlight Express.
Starlight Express.
Wow.
Anyway, so then Popper appears, who's a retired champion steam engine, and he sings Popper's Blues. That sounds like a plaintive sort of...
Blues, like the blues.
As in, the musical form.
Popper. I mean, I suppose, yeah, like, what is it like Papa, like, it's old man Papa?
Yeah, I think so.
Right, okay.
He sees that Rusty's forlorn and doesn't want to race with anyone other than Pearl. And to persuade him that he can still win, Papa introduces him to Belle, the sleeping car with whom he used to race. Right. Rusty asks
Not
her to race...
Not very fast, though, I'm guessing.
I doubt
the
it.
The sleeper car.
No, yeah. You know, a bit lackluster.
Yeah.
A bit moribund. Rusty asks her to race with him and she accepts. In Heat 2, Rusty loses to Electra. He returns to the scrapyard where Popper urges him to trust in the Starlight Express, to trust in God, effectively.
Oh, right, I see. Right? Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So far, Andrew Lloyd Webber and Stilgo are living up to my idea of them, right?
Yeah.
There's another heat, and then apparently through divine intervention, Control announces a vacancy. Oh. The British engine has been scrapped. What? The city of Milton Keynes, out of it. Gone. I don't know whether that's privatisation, do you know what I mean?
Or is it a realisation on the part of the creative team
that they made a massive mistake?
We got to make sure people forget about the city of Milton Keynes by the end of
it. But he was in the shows too fun. They'd already done the programmes or something
exactly,
and written his name in.
Did the city of Milton Keynes, was there a bit of like deficit funding for the show where they just went, oh, we've got to... You know, and they went, we'll do the previews.
Do you think Milton Keynes sponsored the show?
They must have done.
You know, like when you see a roundabout sponsored by a local estate agent or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what
right.
it was.
So go on. So, anyways. Where are we?
So we've got Popper there, right? We've introduced him, hasn't he? And we've Popper Control announces a vacancy. The British, the engine has been scrapped. The British one's been scrapped. We got
right.
up to there.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
Taking this as a sign from the Starlight Express, brackets God, Popper pairs up with Dustin and races, but the race nearly kills him and there's no way he can race again in the final. He begs Rusty to take his place. Unsure of what to do, Rusty asks the Starlight Express for help. End of Act 1.
Right.
Boom.
Brilliant. Right.
Right. So, Act 2. The trains are all gathered together to argue whether Rusty should be allowed to take Popper's place in the final.
Right.
It is eventually decided, and I feel a bit sad for Bobo, it's eventually decided that Rusty can race instead of runner-up Bobo. Don't know why. No. Bobo's just out. The French guy, gone. Uh-huh. Again, it seems quite cutthroat.
I mean, with pressure, yeah.
Anyway, CB, I can't remember, he's one of the freight trains who's agreed to race with Rusty in the final, meets Electra and admits to causing all the major train crashes in recent history.
What?
This, I'm not sure whether he's talking, you know, universally or whether he's just talking in the world of the train set. Wow. He agrees to fix the race so that Electra wins. There's two finals,
I think. Why is he, like... Has he done this maliciously?
I don't know whether the guilt has just been gnawing away at him all these years.
Has he been clumsy? Has he been...
What, to admit that?
Like he's admitted he's caused all these... But is he doing it? Like, is he going... Like, this is the show, right? I know that they probably sing this, but is it him just going, you know, I caused all them. I was me, that.
Yeah.
I caused all
them. Well, the song is called...
Right. Okay.
The uphill final is a dead heat between Electra and Greaseball after CB deliberately causes Rusty to miss the vital collector connection.
Right.
So you have Ease emerging as a little bit of an antagonist.
And I'm thinking this was back in the 80s, so this would have been before the famous Leaves on the Line, because that's a great way to heckle at that show.
Or if you have a show stop.
Bag of leaves. Oh, yes, of course.
You know, if the show breaks down because of technical issues, leaves on the line.
Imagine, I like the idea
that... Wrong kind of leaves.
What I like is the idea that if one of the actors is ill, instead of the swing going on, they have a replacement bus service. they just have an actor come on.
But it takes 3 hours longer.
Yeah. You go, you know, maybe... Like, if you go and see a show on a Sunday, they don't have any trains at all. It's just actors. It's just drama students dressed as buses. And they don't go on the line either. They're just like...
They're in the auditorium.
In the auditorium, just walking up and down. They eventually get to the plot points, but it just takes a lot longer.
Any rose. So there's a few more things that happen. Rusty is encouraged to discover that he himself is the Starlight Express.
Wow.
This is where it starts getting a bit metaphysical. So is that the God inside all of us?
Wow.
Yeah. Rusty stumbles across Dustin and asks to race with him in the final, and Rusty agrees, blah, blah, blah. The downhill final sees Greaseball and Pearl, Electra and CB pitted against each other. Rusty takes the lead and wins the race because the others are all over in a sort of kerfuffle. Greaseball, Electra and CB veer into a tunnel and crash. And that's sort of the end of it. And then there's the consequences. Greaseball and CB begin to face the consequences of their actions in the song One Rock and Roll Too Many.
Right.
Yeah. Pearl and Rusty sort of get together. But here's the kicker.
Sorry, they get together.
Well, Pearl realises that it was always Rusty that she should have raced with. She sings a song called Only He. Rusty finds her and forgives her with the song Only You.
So are they suggesting, is there sort of shunting going on here?
I would imagine
like
so.
Some sort of
coupling. Could you say?
Oh, yeah, that's true, yeah. Oh, they form one train.
Anyway, in terms of the sort of universality of things, Popper tells Greaseball that he can be converted to steam, allowing him to be under his own control, under your own steam, at which point Control orders the trains to obey him and do what they're told. Collectively, they tell him to shut it before Popper, Bell and all the trains celebrate the power of steam, light at the end of the tunnel.
Wow.
They reject God.
Wow.
And if that's what children are coming away with at the end of seeing Starlight Express, hats off to Andrew Lloyd Webber and Richard Stilgo. That's...
Five stars, Richard Dawkins.
come on. The rejection of...
The rejection of God through
God or organised religion?
That's true.
You know, it is.
And at the same time, he's got the balls to do Jesus Christ Superstar. You know why he did that? Guilt.
Yeah.
Pure guilt.
Well, he'd done Jesus Christ Superstar before this.
Ah, right.
So maybe this was the sort of make piece.
Wow.
Yeah. So there you go.
That's...
See, in the back of my mind, I'd never thought that Starlight Express was this...
It's deep.
Fundamental and deep.
Yeah.
But it really is.
But that's what I'm starting to learn about these musicals, is that on the surface, they appear to just be singing trains and just cat. And it turns out that there's so much more underneath.
More to musical theatre than you might imagine.
That's you see, what you've done there is you've beautifully brought the podcast to a close.
There you go.
That's encapsulating what we're trying to... Because this is
what
about
we're trying to achieve.
Case. You were also Tarzan's dad in the film. In the popular motion picture, the Hollywood film.
It was, yeah.
Right, well, we'll probably finish off with introduction off. Like next week, maybe.
Yeah, I think we might introduce you next week.
Take those in the week.
Yeah.
Tweet us, at Real Ross Noble, and your...
At Hadley Fraser.
At Hadley Fraser, and but please in English, not in Japanese. He can't understand.
No.
You know, just emojis.
I'd be very keen to hear from people from the city of Milton Keynes.
Yeah. Do tweet us, and then so the next episode, you'll have another one.
Yeah, we might have another musical to dissect.
You can come and see us every night at the Garrick Theatre, Young
London's
Frankenstein.
West End.
See us at the stage door and hand deliver a letter. Why don't we encourage people to do that? Just if you have correspondence, just hand it in at the
stage door to us or to anybody else who's there.
Artwork, anything you want.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you, Ross.
Well, thank you, and I'll see you on episode 2. Now I've got to get out because I've got to go and I've got to take Liam Page to the vet.